Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about some box office stuff. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, we have not had the opportunity to do traditional box office episodes recently. We've had our Beekeeper spoiler discussion, and we've had like some top 10 stuff. We've had a lot of interesting podcast stuff going on in the early days of 2024. So I thought it would be a good idea to sort of, if you could walk me through and sort of catch me up on some of the big box office news that has happened to the movies, especially that were released at the very end of 2023. So let's start there. Why don't you tell me what those stories look like these days?
Sure thing. And yeah, so I think that one of the big things, and you and I talked a lot about this, we kind of prepped like everyone sort of for what was going to happen here, and that like the first chunk of 2024 has been a little rough. And so what we're seeing is, yeah, some of these movies that were released at the end of 2023 are kind of carrying the load right now. In particular, I think the most surprising one, I don't know how surprising it is to you, but to me, this is like genuinely shocking, is that Wonka, the Willy Wonka musical prequel that stars Timothée Chalamet, has become a hit, I think, bigger than anyone possibly anticipated. It is now currently sitting at $531 million worldwide. That makes it the ninth highest grossing movie that was released in 2023, above Pixar's Elemental, which did $496 million, and not all that far below Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, which did $567 million worldwide. So that's kind of stunning to me.
I mean, the interesting thing about that to me, Ryan, is like, the Paddington movies have such a Paddington being directed by Paul King, who also directed Wonka, just for those who don't know, so everybody's on the same page about this. The Paddington movies have such a beloved reputation among cinephiles. And I'm looking now at the Paddington 2 worldwide grosses, and it's like 230 million, a little less than 230 million.
Yeah, 227, I was going to bring that up. And like, and again, like a successful movie to be certain, but you know, that movie did 41 million domestic. You know,
yeah,
which is, I mean, that's fine. But like it, you know, I mean, that's not, you know, the Wonka's done more than double this.
Yeah, that's just, you know, wild to think about, like Wonka being a movie that, you know, seemingly was set up for to be widely hated. And the sort of magic of Paul King coming through and really like bearing itself out in the box office and like turning into, yeah, a pretty monster size hit compared to the stuff that he's directed previously.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, you and I, if anyone listened to the podcast last week, we did our big, you know, 50 movie moments of 2023 discussion, and Wonka had a couple of moments. It didn't make the, not spoiler for anybody, didn't make the list, but the fact that that movie, a movie when we all saw that trailer, we're like, what the hell is this? That movie had a couple of moments that were in genuine contention to make that list says a lot to me.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's pretty impressive. So I think that, you know, and just to give some idea here, in the most recent weekend, Wonka in its sixth weekend maintained the number three spot with $6.7 million. But that is more, we'll talk about this in a minute, but that's more of a sign of how bleak things are looking right now. But it is very good for Wonka and very good for Warner Brothers.
Okay, so you said the word impressive a little while ago. Tell me about Anyone But You, because you've been talking about this on our Slack channel, but I don't think we've had the opportunity to really talk about it on the podcast before. But this is something that seems to have made quite the impression on you as somebody who tracks box office stuff pretty closely.
This is like, for box office nerds, this is like the sort of thing we wait for, where like something like this happens and you're literally like, I can't find examples of this ever happening before. So Anyone But You is a rom-com that came out that directed by Will Gluck, and it stars Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. It came out over Christmas weekend, and I think we talked about it a bit. But what has happened since the movie debuted is nothing shy of insane. So just to give you an idea, in this most recent weekend, which would be its fifth weekend in theaters, it made $5.4 million, which put it in the fourth place. Pretty good. Respectable. But here, let's walk you through real quick how this movie's journey. It opened to just $6 million over the Christmas frame. You know, $25 million budget, a bunch of competition, Wonka, Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom. It just didn't look good. Then in its second weekend, it increased its take by 46%, taking in like $8.7 million. In its third weekend, it increased its take again to $9.7 million. Now, you see this sometimes with movies that open in like a limited amount of theaters and then expand. This movie was playing in over 3,000 theaters that whole time. I can only find a few examples ever of a movie doing this sort of thing, you know, and those movies were tremendously successful. We're talking about Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, The Greatest Showman, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, like massive hits. Wow. So at this point now, all this to say, Anyone But You has now made just over $100 million worldwide after having what looked like a kind of terrible opening weekend. It has legged out through pure word of mouth. Sony's marketing spend for this one appears to have been relatively modest, you know, so they didn't sink a fortune into advertising this thing to save it. It's just been people showing up. And so, yeah, it's at 64.2 million domestic. It has now made over 10 times that opening weekend, and it still seems to have gas in the tank. So it could make up to like 14 times its opening weekend before its domestic run is over.
Wow.
This is before VOD. This is before anything else. It had a $25 million budget. You know, this is incredible. It's the highest grossing R-rated rom-com since Bridget Jones' Baby in like 2016.
So when something like this happens, Ryan, where, you know, a movie opens really low and then it's all but written off and then goes on to become, you know, a surprise hit, does something like that give you pause? Does it sort of like make you want to reframe the way that you think about this stuff because it's so... I don't know, it's so much of an outlier, or like, because this happened last year too with Elemental, right? Like that's the example, the sort of primary example that I hold in my mind of this happening recently. But this seems like the same kind of thing. So like, how does this change, if at all, the way that you think about this stuff?
Yeah. And I think I try to look at patterns for things, and I think it does give me a little pause, right? Where you're like, okay, these are exceptions. They still are not rules, but it's possible. And so I think you do have to consider that stuff. Like, I don't remember what movie it was, but it was a handful of weeks ago. You and I were talking about a movie and I was like, I'm not prepared to write it off quite yet. But then it did sort of do what movies tend to do. And so, you know, but you do have to look at like, okay, what kind of movies are doing this? And Elemental was a family friendly animated, but it was also like a romantic comedy of sorts, which is sort of interesting. And then Anyone But You has done this. But you got to look at these kind of movies that, you know, can generate that kind of word of mouth. I think like a middling action movie, I just don't think, you know, that doesn't seem super possible, but I'm looking at something like Migration right now, which is the Illumination's most recent movie. And that only declined 15% in its most recent weekend, made $5.3 million. That opened, you know, to just $12 million on that same weekend we were talking about in December, but it has now, you know, made its way to 191 million worldwide. So again, we're looking at an animated movie that's kind of lagging it out. But as we'll talk about in a minute, it's got a lot more to do with other factors going on right now, main being a lack of competition. So, you know, there's a lot to consider. But yeah, it does make me pause. And it does, you know, it makes it, because I think this, our industry in general, is sort of driven by more than I would like, either negativity or like very like salacious and sort of like eye-popping things you can say about something. And you know, if a movie opens to a bad opening weekend, it's very easy and convenient to label it as like a bomb because that'll catch eyeballs. But I'm very cautious about that stuff now. Like, I don't know if I want to say that right away, you know, unless it's incredibly obvious, because stuff like this can happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does change my framing a little bit.
Okay, so are there any other movies that sort of came out either at the very end of last year or at the very beginning of this year that you think would be maybe worth talking about now?
Yeah, a couple quick ones. I think Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, look, there's by no stretch of the imagination is this movie going to be a success, and I'm kind of tired of people trying to frame it as such, but it's made $396 million worldwide. It's going to cross 400 here shortly. I don't know how much more it'll do because it's coming to like VOD this week, but it's almost like an amount where you could save face, you know, like if it had gotten to like 500, I think he could have maybe argued, you know, but yeah, so it's done better than I think people thought it would, but it's also, you know, still not great when you're talking about a movie that made $1.1 billion. And then another one I kind of want to highlight is The Boys in the Boat, which was George Clooney's movie that I just don't hear anyone talking about. And it similarly like opened very low, and it has since made like $44 million domestic somehow. And it just kind of keeps legging out and legging out. And then it's got like an international rollout coming. So that might be like a quiet little success story for MGM there as this kind of rolls out. So, you know, pretty interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about the first big box office bust of this year, which is The Book of Clarence. Tell me about how that movie performed.
Yeah, and so again, like you want to talk about, like we don't want to frame things irresponsibly at the start, right? But so this was a sort of unique religious epic by a filmmaker named James Samuel, and I mean, there's no real way to sugarcoat it. It had a rough start. It opened in over 2,000 theaters and made just $2.5 million. It supposedly had a $40 million budget. I mean, those are the numbers you start looking at, and you're like, I don't see how this sort of can possibly recover. And it didn't. And its second weekend, it made just $1.1 million. And I mean, you know, it's well out of the top 10 now. I mean, this thing's going to make, I don't know. I mean, it might be very lucky to make $10 million domestic, and Christian religious epics tend to have very limited overseas appeal for some reason. So I mean,
yeah, and just to say, like, this is not you know, something like I don't know, one of those Kirk Cameron religious movies, or like Sound of Freedom, or anything like that. It's like James Samuel is the director behind a Western that came out on Netflix a few years ago called The Harder They Fall, which is a terrific movie. And Book of Clarence is more like a comedy almost. Like, I haven't seen it yet. I'm actually planning on seeing it either tonight or tomorrow night, finally catching up with it. But like Lakeith Stanfield is in this, and it's basically about like a guy who tries to con his way into being a messiah in the time of Jesus Christ. So it's like, you know, it's not the typical kind of like religious movie that that, you know, sometimes surprises people with its box office performance. When
no, and that was going to be kind of my next point here, is that like, what sucks is that like Sony's distributing this, and Legendary made it, and like all the money that Sony made on, like, you know, Anyone But You, like, is, you know, might risk being lost here. But the thing is, like, these religious movies that we talked a lot about, like Sound of Freedom and like Jesus Revolution, and some of these movies last year that made a surprising amount of money, but those are like pretty straightforward movies. And it's pretty clear who it's for. This is a movie that even when I saw the previews, I'm like, it looked good to me, but I don't really know who, like, it kind of felt like it was trying to be two things at once, and it didn't really end up pitching for either audience. And that sort of was the risk I think they took. And, you know, it might be one of those things where VOD streaming, because Netflix does have that deal with Sony, so this will eventually go to Netflix. It's the kind of movie I could see doing well on Netflix, but I don't know to what degree that can sort of save it.
Yeah, I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, because Anyone But You seemed to me like a prime example of a movie that, you know, in its early days didn't perform super well, but I just kind of like shrugged my shoulders when I saw that, and I was like, oh well, it's, you know, it's going to be on Netflix eventually, and then it'll become like the biggest thing on Netflix because it has two super hot people in it. You can throw them up on a tile and then it'll be, you know, in the top 10 of Netflix for sure, because it's a big movie that did get an advertising campaign. And Sony has done this over and over again, where its movie, you know, the Jennifer Lawrence comedy last year, No Hard Feelings, did the same thing. So, you know, it just kind of seemed like inevitable that Anyone But You was going to be a huge movie on Netflix. And I was thinking the same kind of thing could probably happen for Book of Clarence. But like, has your thinking on that kind of thing evolved at all? Have you gotten any more insight into, like, you know, what kind of value a studio places on a movie like that popping on Netflix versus making money in theaters or anything? Or are you still sort of in the same camp that you've been in for a while on that?
I mean, I'm still in a similar camp. I think, you know, a VOD hit is great. Like, I think, like, if your movie makes enough money at the box office, and then it can kind of like what we've seen time and time again, even movies that flop in theaters make more money on VOD. So, like, I am still hugely in favor of theatrical releases, even if it doesn't pan out super well. And I think Book of Clarence, similarly, even though it has flopped so bad in theaters, it will do better on VOD as a result, and it will probably do better on Netflix as a result. To what degree that can make up for a $40 million budget and whatever in a marketing spend, I have no idea. Like those numbers are still wildly not transparent. But I do think there's levels of it where like you and I have talked many times and we've seen there are gigantic hits that studios try to say didn't make money. So, you know, when you talk about a movie that clearly didn't make money in theaters, like, I don't know how the studio is going to, I don't know how you're going to try to argue that it was a hit. Cause that happens all the time where the studios try to make their failures seem like they did better, or they'll eventually, when people want money, try to say that their hits didn't make money.
Yeah.
So it's really crooked and weird, but I still fall in a similar place where, you know, without the physical media market that used to exist and some of these other ancillary revenue streams, like we talk a lot about cable disappearing, you know, like that used to be a big revenue stream and some of the stuff that, yeah, I still think like a theatrical flop is going to have a tough time recovering after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a bunch more box office stuff.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, Ryan, let's get into some more recent things that have hit theaters. Tell me about the Mean Girls musical. How has that performed so far?
You know, this is a good example of something we were sort of just talking about, which is that this is a movie that was originally supposed to go to Paramount Plus directly. It was not produced with theatrical in mind. But when the strikes sort of moved a bunch of movies out of 2024, or at least later in the year, Paramount was like, well, let's go ahead and put this in theaters. And they did something similar with Smile in 2022, which became a gigantic hit. And I don't think this movie is going to be as big as Smile per se, but it has done well. The Mean Girls musical has topped the charts for the last 2 weeks. It opened at $28.6 million. It dropped like 60% in its second week with $11.7 million. So not a great hold, but it has made $50 million domestic and $16.2 internationally. So it's sitting a little over $66 million worldwide. For a movie that was originally just going to go direct to streaming and not make any money theatrically, that's great. It's got a $36 million budget. So, you know, it wasn't like tremendously expensive to make. So even if it doesn't profit in theaters purely, like this is going to bring revenue to Paramount that they weren't counting on. It also, it's giving theaters something to show at a time when there is very little.
Yeah.
So it's doing well. And I applaud Paramount for, you know, moving this one. But yeah, so, I mean, it's doing well. I mean, it's probably got a chance to get 100 million ish, I think, maybe by the end of its run, give or take, which, you know, for a $36 million movie, that's kind of right in the range you'd like to see.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I want to read a listener email. Lorenzo from Florida wrote in reacting to the episode that we did. I think it was, it was two Fridays ago now? Anyway, that we did the, or maybe it was last Friday. It was, anyway, a recent episode that we did about the musical idea from 2004, the other movies that from that year that could be movie musicals. And basically Lorenzo was just saying how 50 First Dates would have been his first choice. And he was excited to see that you chose that movie, Ryan, and was talking about how great Sandler is. And he also mentioned, he said, I want to take this opportunity to put it on folks' radars that while it's not a musical, there was a magnificent Mexican remake of 51st Dates that came out a few years ago. It's called Como Si Fuera La Primavera Vez, which translates in English to As If It Were the First Time. And he says, that's a bit confusing given the original 51st Dates was also released in Mexico with that same title. But he says it swaps out the tropical Hawaiian setting of the original 51st Dates for a tropical Dominican Republic setting. It stars Vadhir Derbez in the Sandler part. And Vadhir is the son of Eugenio Derbez, who is widely considered to be the Mexican Adam Sandler. He even starred alongside Sandler in Jack and Jill, but most U.S. audiences probably know him best at this point from his role as the music teacher in the Best Picture winning Coda, which I know you're a fan of that movie as well.
He's great.
So his son stars in, basically plays the Sandler role in a Mexican remake of that 51st Date. So just wanted to put that out there, if for no other reason than just to put it on your radar, Ryan, since it seems like, you know, a confluence of things that you might be interested in. So,
well, I'm glad someone else had the same wonderful idea that I had. Hollywood, if you're listening, my fee is modest.
So thanks for that email, Lorenzo. Appreciate that.
But I think that the only thing I think is worth mentioning is that this Mean Girls remake is a musical, and there's been a lot of chatter about, like, Paramount is not really marketing it as a musical. And there was some quote, I think it was in an interview with Variety, where one of the PR people was like, yeah, I mean, we don't want to scare people off, you know? And, like, that's exactly what I had sort of thought was going on, is that, like, if you market something explicitly as a musical, you might alienate some people. And I think to that end, another movie we were hailing as a hit a few weeks ago, The Color Purple, has since fallen off a cliff. It had an amazing opening day, made $18 million on Christmas, but it has since kind of gone nowhere, and it's made $59 million domestic in total, and it's now, I mean, barely in the top 20. Mm. It's $100 million budget, I've heard, for that one. So, you know, unfortunately, that was marketed pretty explicitly as a musical. Or at least a little more explicitly as music.
Yeah, just barely more, I would say. Yeah, yeah.
But it was a little lot more obvious. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying it's certainly not apples to oranges there, but it's kind of a bummer situation that sort of the inverse of Anyone But You, where it started great and fell off. But I think that's Mean Girls in a nutshell. What else do we want to talk about here?
Tell me about The Beekeeper. We've talked about that movie a little bit on the podcast, but how has it actually performed?
I would love to talk about The Beekeeper, Ben. I currently, as far as movies released in 2024, The Beekeeper is the number one movie worldwide. It has made $75 million worldwide, including $31 million domestic and $44.2 million internationally. It opened at number two with $16.5 million, had a better hold than Mean Girls, declined just 49%. Made $8.4 million domestic in its recent weekend. Directed by David Ayer, starring Jason Statham. Big, silly action movie, and audiences seem to be into it.
Okay, so how does this stack up for Ayer's filmography?
Well, what I was kind of surprised last week when I was looking over this, because the numbers were good on the opening weekend, is that this is the first theatrical success that David Ayer has had since Suicide Squad in 2016. Shocking to me, because, like, look, we don't need to get into a debate about Suicide Squad and what, you know, it being good, bad, whatever. Like, the movie made $745 million worldwide and won an Oscar. Like, he should have very quickly either been on that sequel or another big movie or something. And instead, he made,
Collector with Shia LaBeouf.
Right, but then he made Bright for Netflix, which was like the big Will Smith fantasy movie that, like, it did well, but then it was kind of here today, gone tomorrow. That Tax Collector movie, exactly, with Shia LaBeouf, which came out around 2020, hardly registered for most people. It's just been like a weird run for him. So he's finally kind of getting to celebrate a success story now, like, 7.5 years after he made a gargantuan blockbuster hit. And I think that's, you know, good for him. Like, he had a bit of a rough thing there. And it's also good for Statham still, like, managing to just keep these, like, mid-budget action movies going. Like, he's been doing this for a long time and he's still got appeal. And, you know, this is kind of doing almost exactly what I thought it would do, which was sort of like John Wick numbers, the first John Wick anyway. And I think, you know, this is like, again, at a time when theaters have almost nothing going right now, this is very welcome and good. So,
so you think it's enough for a sequel?
Yeah, I think it's trending that way, especially because this is an MGM release and Amazon owns MGM now. So all MGM releases going forward are not quite as beholden to needing to deliver like straight up profit at the box office, because ultimately these will go to Prime Video. And that is something that Amazon, you know, they bought MGM to get Prime Video output. And yes, they're being smart and giving these movies wide theatrical releases, but you know, at the end of the day, they're going to go to streaming. And mm-hmm. so, I think it might. And especially because, like I said, it's holding a little better than like Mean Girls was. So the audience response seems to be pretty healthy. And depending on how it goes in the coming weeks, I would say the budget for this one still hasn't been revealed, which is like kind of driving me nuts. But I got to imagine it's like 40 million or less. So, you know, if it gets to what, like 120 worldwide, which is not off the table at this point, like you could easily justify a sequel.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about a new movie that just came out recently called ISS, which is a sci-fi thriller. And I would not be surprised if a lot of our listeners had never heard of this movie, had no idea it was out. It's gotten like a very, very limited, at least from what I've seen, marketing push.
I mean, I gotta say, that trailer played an awful lot in theaters for me. Like when I was
Oh, it did?
Theaters,
okay.
Yeah, it played, but this is did you see this by chance?
I did, yes.
I quite liked it. I saw it on Friday night. I very much sort of like ostensibly plays like a slasher movie at the International Space Station, you know. But yeah, it's a Bleecker Street release, and Bleecker Street does not like, this is a distributor that does not really, they don't really deliver big theatrical hits. They've had a couple of like, you know, what you might call like a single, to use a baseball reference. Like mm-hmm. they don't really, they kind of do the IFC Midnight thing where they're releasing movies in theaters to what I presume is kind of promote the inevitable VOD release. But this was the only wide release movie this most recent weekend, and it only made $3 million, which was actually at the top end of estimates. So like, you know, it might be okay. I don't know what Bleecker Street invested in it. Again, this is another movie where I could not find the budget anywhere. Having seen it, if they were clever with the space shots, probably it could be a $25 million movie, mm-hmm. I would guess. But, you know, even a $3 million opening is not going to, you know, again, you're not going to profit in theaters that way. And again, some of these numbers I'm just guessing. I can only, you know, certain things surprise me budget wise. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's anything to get people in theaters right now. But yeah, this one just didn't. This is kind of the problem right now, is these are the movies you're sort of propping up the box office with, and that's not really enough, you know, to sort of sustain theaters right now. So that's kind of the sad state of affair of things.
Yeah, I do have a feeling that this movie is going to get, you know, it's going to find its audience on VOD. Like this definitely seems like, yeah, one of those things that, you know, the tile and the premise of it, like, you know, people are scrolling through looking for something to watch. So they're going to fire this up at home. I have no doubt.
So. I completely agree. And I do think this is an example of like the theatrical release, like the handful of people like me that go see it and are like, oh, this movie's dope. It will, that little bit of word of mouth will help push this movie streaming VOD. So I think if this movie didn't cost a fortune, which I don't believe that it did, this is an example of like that sort of mixed release model probably working. Mm-hmm. But again, it all depends. I don't know if this was Bleecker Street saying, let's try our hands at a marketable blockbuster. Like, I have no idea. They acquired the movie, so I don't know what the, but yeah. So, but you know, it's not for theaters that need product right now. It's not helping a ton. That's the bigger issue.
Yeah. Okay. So you are in the process as we record this right now of writing an article called "The 2024 Box Office is Off to a Rough Start and It Won't Get Better Anytime Soon." Tell me about like the premise of that article.
Yeah. So let's, again, you know, this is something, if regular listeners of the podcast, this should not surprise you. We were a little concerned about what was going to happen this year. And ComScore is sort of the Kelly Blue Book of like box office stuff. They're the, you know, unquestioned like source for these numbers. They're currently stating that the domestic box office is down 10% compared to 2023 at this time. And so that's 10% down. And again, as we've talked about a lot, the box office is still, even last year, which was a good year, was still largely recovering from the pandemic. We were on an upward swing, but we needed to keep that momentum going. So we're already down, which is bad. The bigger problem is that the next few weeks are bleak. Mm-hmm. They look bad to a degree that I didn't even realize. So like, yeah, these, like, for example, this upcoming weekend, the only real major release worth noting is the black and white version of Godzilla Minus One, which I'm probably going to go see it because I love that movie, but I don't think it's going to move the needle all that much.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not till February 2nd where we have Argyle, which is the new Matthew Vaughn movie from Apple, which I think everyone has seen that trailer 150,000 times now. A movie that I think its prospects are very uncertain. Like, I don't know. Is that going to be a $60, $70 million opening weekend? I don't think so. So, you know, then if Madam Web bombs, like, it's not really till the beginning of March when Dune Part 2 arrives that we have any real honest to God hope on the horizon. So, I mean, February is looking rough right now.
Yeah.
You know, there are movies that we're looking forward to, like Lisa Frankenstein, I think might do okay for its audience. I think, you know, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2 might actually pop for its audience a little bit. That Bob Marley movie, I have no idea. You got Drive Away Dolls, which is the, is it Ethan or?
Yep. Ethan Coen.
Yep. Which again could do fine, but these are not going to prop up theaters for an entire month.
Yeah. It's a small movie.
So, I mean, yeah, things. So by the time you get to March, how down is the box office going to be compared to last year? I don't know. So then you're sort of relying on, you know, movies like Dune Part 2, Kung Fu Panda 4, Imaginary, Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire to like overperform relative to expectations to try to make up for things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty rough.
Well, I don't really know how to end that on a positive note, Ryan, because it doesn't seem like there's a ton of positivity there. I do want to ask about Madam Web, though. Like, you follow the superhero stuff pretty closely, certainly more closely than I do. Are we still only at one trailer for Madam Web, even though it comes out in, like, basically, like, 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, one full-length trailer. There's been some pretty fun marketing if you follow the internet. Well, like, there was like an ocean spray bottle that revealed Dakota Johnson's, like, full costume. So there's been like weird international stuff, and like and they released a batch of character posters last week, and they're still touting that February 14th release date. So like I thought they might move it, but that's not happening now. So yeah, I don't know. My guess is they might release one here in the next week or two. I wonder, like, there's the NFC and AFC NFL championship games next week. Like,
oh yeah,
maybe they would drop a spot during that. I don't know, but I don't want to speculate too much here, but I'm also wondering if Sony is not feel super confident in the film and they might not want to invest a ton, you know, cause that like a marketing campaign costs a lot of money. So I don't know. Are they minimizing risk? I have no idea. I'm just guessing a little bit, but it is a bit odd for a superhero movie of that size to have a marketing campaign this quiet late in the game, right?
Yeah,
but what I've heard is that Sony has kept the budget for these low. I've heard that they're like under 100 million and possibly as low as like 70 or 80 million, which is pretty low for a superhero movie.
Yeah,
if that's true, you know, good. But also, that seems to be a movie that, like, the industry is kind of like, please, Madam Web, save us. And I don't know. So yeah, if your question was, is it a little quiet? It's quiet as hell.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be back later this week to talk about a bunch of other stuff, news, and we'll have a water cooler this week, I think. Sundance Film Festival is going on right now. Bill Bria is there in person for us. Me and Chris Evangelista are going to be covering some stuff remotely, through the sort of online portion of the festival, which really kicks off in earnest this Wednesday. So Chris and I will be busy Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, watching as many Sundance movies and screeners and stuff like that as we can get our hands on. So I'm not sure exactly what the schedule for the podcast is going to look like. I'm going to do my best to have at least a news episode and a water cooler episode for you guys this week. But if we drop a couple days here and there, that's why. And we'll be back with like a Sundance specific episode certainly next week to wrap up our coverage of the fest and let you guys know like what the coolest stuff that we saw and all that was. So yeah, that'll do it for today's episode. You can find more about all these stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to our newsletter. There is a link for that in the show notes. Please send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.